Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Still shoveling, still digging, still scraping, still trying to stay warm. Yes, I understand completely. Welcome to our program. It's the Austin Hill in the Morning program here on the Faith Radio Network. It's now 6:04. Hope you have a great weekend, and thank you for being here. It is an honor to be with you, honor to join you every weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to be hopeful, helpful, informative, and challenging all at the same time. Coming up later this morning, just about an hour from now, our great friend Lisa Marone, the healthcare professional extraordinaire. You know, she loves to admonish us to get healthy for heaven's sake. And by that, she means that there is a spiritual component to our bodies, which is, I think that's pretty important stuff. Anyway, she is going to join us to talk about six ways to fight off premature death. She is making the case in this latest piece that she's written, Lisa Marone, that oftentimes in the Western world, in our country, in other Western nations, where we have an abundance of food, where we still are very free to make choices with our health and with our bodies and to exercise or not to exercise, oftentimes because of a lack of proper care of ourselves, a lack of good stewardship, if you will, We send ourselves to circumstances that don't have to be the case. So fighting off premature death, taking better care of ourselves so as to live the full life that is intended for us. Lisa Marone joins us at about 7:07 this morning, Central Time, so stand by for that. You know the name Nagma Abedini, right? Nagma Abedini, the wife of American imprisoned pastor Saeed Abedini. He's from Boise, Idaho. They're both originally from the country of Iran, but they're U.S. citizens now. And Saeed Abedini from Boise, Idaho, is a pastor at Calvary Chapel Church in Idaho. He is being held in prison in the country of Iran. And it's quite fascinating. His wife, Saeed Abedini, spoke at a big gathering, a big convention in the state of Maryland over the weekend. And about half an hour from now, I'll let you hear some of the comments that she's made. Now, the wife of the pastor, Nagma Abedini is her name. She's been doing some fascinating public speaking engagements and media interviews. She was just on a media television network that broadcasts to the Middle Eastern region of the world. It's called the Voice of America Persia. Voice of America Persia. And I will tell you, this lady, I mean, she had an Arabic translator. She was speaking in English and it was translated into Arabic. This lady pretty much spelled out the call of the gospel from Christ himself and said, listen, this is for all the world. This is not just, my Christian faith is not just an American thing. This is for all the world. And made the case to say, whatever your circumstances, you may feel helpless and hopeless, as though you are held hostage, if you will. You are subject to authoritarian rule there in Iran or other parts of the world, and you have no say in the future of your country and your government. But if you are a Christian, if you call upon the name of the Lord, Nagma Abedini said, you have direct contact with the God of the universe. It was just amazing stuff what she did. And that was just a few days ago. Over the weekend, on Saturday, she spoke at this convention with Americans in Maryland, a public policy and political convention. And she was saying, American Christians specifically, we need to start asking questions of our own governments. Being prayerful, yes, but also asking questions and demanding that we have a national foreign policy that respects Christians. And we need to know what's going on with this secret arms deal, this secret treaty being negotiated with Iran and such. Anyway, I'll let you hear some of that. That's my paraphrase, but Nagma Abedini speaking in Maryland over the weekend. I'll let you hear that coming up in just a few moments. As we continue, Speaking of Christians around the world, David Curry is the president and CEO of a great nonprofit group called Open Doors USA. He'll join me on the guest line to talk about the plight of Christians in the U.S. and throughout the world. That's next here on Faith Radio. It's 6:08. I'm Austin Hill.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
It's 6:09 Central Time from Faith Radio. Good morning. I am Austin Hill. Glad you're with us. The plight of Christians living in other parts of the world. That's a very delicate subject. We try to attend to that in appropriate measure here on this program. For that, we turn our attention to a prominent and very respected nonprofit organization headquartered here stateside. Open Doors has for nearly 60 years been reporting on and trying to support the plight of Christians worldwide in some of the most oppressive countries around the world. David Curry is the president and CEO of Open Doors, an American-based organization, here to talk with us about what they have just recently republished as the Open Doors 2015 watch list, a list of some of the most oppressive countries in the world and the conditions under which Christians are living. David Curry, welcome back to Faith Radio. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Austin. I sure appreciate it.
Wanted to start off asking you about the nation of Iran. Not surprisingly, that's on your list of oppressive nations. It's also a nation that we are told our current government, our current administration is negotiating some sort of secretive treaty with, which is a complete break from American foreign policy over the last 35 years or so. Tell us what's going on in Iran with Christian believers in particular.
Well, what we've done is we've accumulated a pile of data. We have researchers around the world that study the different drivers of persecution. It could be family persecution, religious persecution, governmental persecution. Mm-hmm. And what you have in Iran is that sort of governmental control with another layer of religious expression. So you have a majority Muslim faith. Obviously there, and then you have an extremist rule within Iran that makes being a Christian or even having a Bible or trying to share a Bible, any of these sort of basic things we would think are part of freedom of religious expression, very difficult in Iran. So if you are somebody who wants to attend church, you're going to have to go to a secret church, a home church, a house church. Since they tried to force the closure of many churches. Many Christians are imprisoned in Iran for their faith. And when I say imprisoned, they're not doing anything that you and I might consider uncivil behavior, but they're sharing the Bible. They're talking about their personal faith. They're asking questions in too public a fashion, I guess, about their faith. And so then they're imprisoned for that. So it's a very difficult place for people to be Christians.
David Curry, it strikes me that the country of Iran has been put under the microscope, or maybe a better way to say it, under the spotlight, given the plight of American Christian pastor Saeed Abedini from Boise, Idaho, who is currently being held in a what we are told is a very brutal prison in that country. And several things that have come out and come to light as I've observed it. For one thing, we were told that Pastor Abedini was very bold with his faith, out speaking to people in public parks in the capital city of Tehran about Jesus, and indeed meeting in secret home churches. I've also been told, this comes from his wife, Nagme Abedini, she says that, and they know this very well, their family lineage is from Iran, and Saeed Abedini was born in Iran, but Nagme Abedini says that indeed it's a matter of national law in Iran that religious minority groups receive protections and should be and are intended to be allowed to worship. That's not playing out the way apparently the spirit of the law would suggest, at least so it would seem. Can you clarify further on that?
Yes, there are, and those are dear folks, and we're praying for Pastor Saeed. Mm-hmm. It was just last week that I was talking with some Iranian officials about his case, and I think a lot of other folks are as well. So very sensitive to that. There's also laws, though, within Iran that say you're not allowed to share your Christian faith, proselytize. these sorts of things. So they are finding the laws that they need the government to justify his imprisonment, and that's, I don't agree with it. I'm absolutely opposed to it, but they have a rationale which they're imposing on this case and others. The thing to remember about Pastor Saeed is that he's just one of several hundred people who are imprisoned. Fortunately for Pastor Saeed, he's an American citizen, but most of them are not. They're Iranian citizens. They're held for an enormously long time for very small infractions, meeting in a church, sharing a Bible, these kinds of things, and they'll spend 6 years in jail for it.
Mm-hmm.
If not lose everything or be beaten and so forth. So, yes, Pastor Saeed is held under some, justification of breaking the law, but, that's what happens within these regimes, Austin, is that they set up rules that benefit their system. And then they impose them, and they think they will tell you that Pastor Saeed and other pastors, because I just had this conversation last week, as I said, with an Iranian official, are lawbreakers, and they justify it by saying they're meeting in house churches, and that is illegal.
But David,
we're asking that people have the freedom to meet and to discuss whatever they want. That's what freedom of religious expression is.
David Curry is the president and CEO of Open Doors USA, a nonprofit group headquartered here in the United States, a group that has just published its 2015 World Watch List, a list of some of the most dangerous countries for Christians to live in. David, I also noticed that the country of Yemen is on that list, and that's especially noteworthy right now. We have just over the last 48 hours or so seen the news that indeed the U.S. Embassy in Yemen, it's a nation that we've had diplomatic ties to for many decades, but the U.S. Embassy has now been forced closed. U.S. Marines who have been stationed there on a military base in Yemen, they've been ordered to hand in or destroy their weapons and evacuate. And for all intents and purposes, the country of Yemen appears as though it has now fallen to the control of Al-Qaeda. Tell us what's going on here, if you would, please.
Well, you bet. Yemen is an interesting case because you have essentially a tug of war between Shiites and Sunnis there. You have a country that borders. Try to imagine the map here. It's bordered by Saudi Arabia and has been propped up by Saudi Arabia. The government's been propped up by the United States government. We've passed $1 billion to them on the idea that they would fight Al-Qaeda, which they have not effectively done. Now, you also have a third player in this, and that is Iran, which has supported this rebel group that some people say are Al-Qaeda. They're not called Al-Qaeda. They have a different name. A lot of these extremist groups have names, whether they're in Kenya and Al-Shabaab or Boko Haram in Nigeria or ISIS in Iraq and Syria. They have a very similar ideology. And so Iran has been, many people believe, has been backing this group. They've made statements that they want more control, more say in the shaping of the government.
Mm-hmm.
They seized a little bit of control in September. They seized a little bit more, and now they've taken over the presidential palace and effectively had a coup, and we're having to pull out. There's a pattern here, Austin, and I think is not separated from Christian persecution. That is that Christian persecution, in our view, and I think it's proven out in case after case, Tunisia and Egypt and so on, is that Christian persecution is the lead indicator when an area is going to tip into chaos, because when religious expression is that opposed, is that dangerous, you have all the elements necessary for a chaotic regime change and all these other things. So this it hasn't happened overnight. It's been creeping. It's been happening because you have a lot of money pouring into a poor country between a tug of war of Saudi Arabia and Iran and all of these other forces. So it's in a very interesting dynamic. It's hard to understand, except if you just try to think in terms of the Cold War, and you have polars, the United States and Soviet Union, you have that sort of tug of war happening in Yemen as well between these powers within the Middle East.
David Curry, the president and CEO of Open Doors USA. They have published their 2015 World Watch List, a list of some of the most dangerous countries for Christians. We'll continue with David Curry in just moments with another update. Another nation on this list might surprise you. I'll tell you about that next. It's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Good morning at 6:22 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Where's the most dangerous place in the world to be a Christian? Open Doors USA, a fine nonprofit organization headquartered here in America, has for 60 years been reporting on the plight of struggling Christians around the world and has been offering support in a variety of different capacities to those Christians. David Curry is the president and CEO of the organization. He's with us on our guest line here at Faith Radio. David Curry, I was surprised to see the nation of all nations, Mexico, makes it to your list, your world watch list of dangerous countries, our neighbors to the south, right here in our own hemisphere. Mexico, a dangerous place for Christians. Tell us what's going on.
Well, that's the most surprising one for many people on the list. You're not alone. But if you remember in our first segment, we talked about there are different drivers of persecution in different contexts around the world. So you have in some places where the community is persecuting people, it's not the government. But if you convert to a faith, people will ostracize you. You might lose your job. In other places, it is the government. In other places, it's the church. You have an Orthodox version of the church attacking, sort of an upstart evangelical version of the church. And what's happening in Mexico is really unique. It's similar to what's happening in Colombia, which is also on the list, and that is organized crime is the driver of Christian persecution. You have a large Christian country, essentially. You have Catholics, you have evangelicals, but you don't have some radical sects there within Mexico, but what you have is drug cartels, which have systematically attacked priests, pastors, churches in villages around their drug trade, where these churches have stood up to the cartels and tried to take away their drug runners, try to help the kids in these communities so that they're not susceptible to getting pulled into the drug trade. Where you have those kinds of communities, you've had cases where the drug cartels I'm in the ballpark, but somewhere around 11, 15 people who were executed last year under those kinds of conditions by the cartels. So we note that as a form of pressure against Christian expression within Mexico.
To what degree has that kind of violence spilled over across the border into some of the border towns here in the United States? My recollection is that we have indeed had pastors and perhaps some Catholic priests killed stateside, ostensibly by members of the drug-running cartel out of Mexico. Can you comment on that?
Well, those cases I wouldn't be able to comment on in any great detail, but I would say it's one of the things you need to consider when you start thinking about what kind of persecution will Christians be facing here in the West. All of the factors that we see that are present in these other countries, where you might have extremist groups attacking soft targets, churches, could we see bombings of churches in the United States? Yes, I think you could. Could you see drug cartels or these kinds of things attacking churches or people who are trying to stand for some sort of moral values? I think you have and you will. Will you see governments imposing restrictions of zoning and taxing and any sorts of laws to restrict the growth and the presence of churches like you see in China, where they say, we don't want to see crosses from the freeway, so we're going to restrict you from building here. We don't want to see this and that. You're going to see these kinds of things in the United States. I think those things can happen. I think you'll see those kind of pressures, both from extremist groups that are allowed to enter the country and or from aggressive secularism and its wheels that are in motion. So I think you can see those kinds of things in the West, absolutely.
Is that kind of oppression here in the U.S., is it inevitable, or can Christians make a difference and actually exercise their right to have a say in government and stave off that kind of oppression?
I think it is something that we can speak up about and take part in. And it starts with and this is what the World Watch List and what Open Doors is all about, recognizing that this is already happening to your brothers and sisters around the world. And we've got to speak up and support them, encourage them, pray for them. There are things you can do. People should be praying. If you're a follower of Jesus, you should pray through this World Watch List and pray for people in Yemen, pray for people in Iran, pray for people who are going through difficult circumstances, because one day it would be you. The scriptures tell us that we should pray for those brothers and sisters that are in chains as if it were ourselves. And I think that's an important lesson. Let's not just wait for it to happen to us before we think it's a big deal. Let's think about this and concern ourselves with it right now.
Point very well taken. David Curry, President and CEO of Open Doors USA. That is a longstanding, almost 60-year-old nonprofit organization here in the U.S. that reports on and seeks to support the suffering church abroad. And they published their 2015 World Watch List, some of the most oppressive places in the world to be a Christian. David Curry, your call to prayer is well received on this end. Thank you very much for your time. We look forward to talking again soon, and we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate your program.
It's now 6:28 Central Time. This is Faith Radio, and I'm Austin Hill. From the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill, here weekday mornings 6 till 8. Connecting Faith happens weekdays at 12 noon Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. Last Friday, host Joe Rathmanner spoke with author Stan Guthrie about his book, God's Story in 66 Verses. Here's part of that discussion.
Obviously, wisdom is a process. We're not born wise, but if we're looking in the right direction, if our hearts are open to God's instruction, we will become wise over the course of life. I mean, I've certainly discovered that in my own life. I'm a lot wiser now than I used to be, but I didn't get there all at once, and you know, a lot of trial and error as I learn God's ways, as I just go through life in certain situations. And I think Proverbs says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. It's really a pathway that we walk, and we can trust that God will walk that path with us.
Right. And we do learn by doing things that didn't work out not to do those things anymore.
Yes.
It's a great way to learn.
Sometimes one of the best teachers.
Well, we have a caller who called in from Plymouth. She asked, would you recommend this book for younger people, even 8, 9, 10-year-old or teenagers? Can you respond to that?
Well, the genesis of this book actually came in a Sunday school situation, and it's written on it's about a 6th or 7th grade level, so and the chapters are short, so I would say yes, this book is very suitable for kids. I mean, would you rather hand a kid, you know, just the book of Leviticus without explanation, or would you want to kind of give him or her a little roadmap into it of 3 or 4 pages? And that's what I try to do here. One of the things I try to tell people when they're thinking about whether this book will work for them is the fact that it is not meant to replace the Bible. It is meant to supplement the Bible and to supplement our thinking and to kind of give us an easy way in. It's a good place to start, but it's not a good place to finish. It's a good place to get the wheels turning in your own mind. And as it kind of gives you some things to hang on to for each particular book and then for the Bible as a whole. I want you to really wrestle with Scripture itself, and if this book helps you do that, that's great. But if you just kind of read this book and say, okay, now I know all about the Bible, then I think you'll have missed part of what it's meant to do, which is to kind of get you into Scripture for yourself.
That's from last Friday's episode of Connecting Faith. It happens 12 noon Central Time at Faith Radio. Coming up on today's episode, Neil Stavem will be interviewing licensed counselor Leslie Vernick about her book, The Emotionally Destructive Marriage. That's Connecting Faith, 12 noon Central Time here on Faith Radio. It's now 6:32. I'm Austin Hill. Still to come, some amazing remarks, some amazing courage being displayed by the wife of an imprisoned American Christian pastor. I'll let you hear some of those amazingly bold remarks coming up in just moments. SRN News on the way next. Good morning. It's now 6:36 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. And thank you for being here. I am Austin Hill, in the house every weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to be hopeful, challenging, informative, and helpful right here at the start of your day. Lisa Marone, a physical therapist, author, professor, and a regular friend of ours here on our program. Lisa Marone joins us at about 7:08 this morning, just shortly after 7 o'clock, to talk about the things we can do to prevent premature death. Now, she is a healthcare professional like few others. I won't say like none other, but she's got it going on, and she connects our Christian faith to our bodies and our physical well-being and the proactive steps that we can and should take to be good stewards of our health, those of us who are blessed with good health. And she makes the case in a very gentle and in a very gracious way to say sometimes we're not good stewards of the resource of good health that God blesses us with. And she's talked about this before, but she's written about this in very specific terms. It's on our website at myfaithradio.com. But she says some people come here in a land of abundance where we have food available. I mean, the not very many people who completely go without good, nutritious food here in the United States of America. Where we have food, where we have exercise opportunities, we have still mostly the best health care in the world here in the United States of America. Still, some people make unfortunate choices, and they're health degrades, and they die prematurely. So she'll address that issue coming up shortly after 7 o'clock here on the Faith Radio Network. Also, about an hour from now, we check in with our great friend, Dr. David Aikman. Dr. David Aikman, historian and a journalist who has covered the world in amazing detail over the last 40, 50 years or so. Dr. David Aikman, professor at Patrick Henry College. He'll join us at about 7:35 this morning. Some thoughts on some of the big global affairs transpiring around the world, things that are taking place in our lifetime, and give us a perspective from a biblical sort of vantage point. So all of this and more coming up here on this program, Austin Hill in the Morning, here at Faith Radio. I'm going to, in just a moment here, I'm going to play some audio for you. And it's audio from a lady whose name you probably know. She comes from a different culture than most of us. She is a native of Iran, although, well, that's where her family heritage is from. She was born here in the U.S. Her name is Nagmeh Abedini. She is married to a guy named Saeed Abedini. Both of them, as a married couple, are U.S. citizens. Both of them come from Iranian heritage. Saeed Abedini, the husband, he was born in Iran and legally immigrated into the U.S. Nagmeh's parents fled the tyranny of the Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran back in the late 1970s, and she was born shortly after her parents found asylum here in the U.S. But be that as it may, they fell in love, got married. They are both fully U.S. citizens. They are Christians. Saeed Abedini is a pastor. He serves with Calvary Chapel Church at the Calvary Chapel location in Boise, Idaho. And almost 3 years ago now, Pastor Saeed Abedini traveled back to his home country of Iran. He was there in the capital city of Tehran, and he was working on establishing a Christian orphanage. And he was initially put on house arrest, told by the federal government of Iran he couldn't leave the house, couldn't go anywhere. Then he was taken into custody, put on trial in what we would in the Western world think of as kind of a sham trial, and sentenced to 8 years of a prison term in a very, very brutal, very dangerous prison in the country of Iran. So, the wife now, his wife, Nagmeh Abedini, has for about 2.5 years lived as a single mom, and she's done some extraordinary public speaking venues and some international television media interviews. You can look up her name. She's been all over CNN, MSNBC, Fox News Channel, CBS News, all the big national broadcast and cable news channels. They've done stories about her and her husband from time to time over the last 2.5, almost 3 years now. But I'm here to tell you that Nagmeh Abedini spoke at a conference in the state of Maryland over the weekend. It was a conference where people were gathered to consider who might make a good next U.S. president. among other things, that's one of the things that they were doing. You had some prospective presidential candidates there. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush spoke there. A lady named Carly Fiorina. You may not know that name, Carly Fiorina. She was chief executive of Hewlett-Packard, HP tech company, for years and years. And she's actually expressing interest in running for the presidency now. So Carly Fiorina was there. And so also is a gentleman named Rand Paul, United States Senator Rand Paul, a gentleman who is a guest on this program, just recently. The former senator from Pennsylvania, Rick Santorum, he made an appearance at this conference going on in Maryland. And in the midst of this, a lady who I feel a special attachment. I've never met either one of the Avedinis, but a very dear friend of mine is an elder who sits on the elder board of this church there in Boise, Idaho, Calvary Chapel, Boise. And I know the Avedinis mainly through my friend who's the elder, Frank Kaprivnikar. Mr. Kaprivnikar has been a guest on this program to talk about this terrible scenario that has unfolded with the Avedinis, inasmuch as one of their own, a staff pastor from Calvary Chapel in all places, Boise, Idaho, being held as a foreign prisoner in the country of Iran. And I will tell you that even in this studio where I sit hosting the show, I've got this photographic image. I've got the image of the face of Pastor Saeed Avedini right in front of me here, beside the computer screen that I'm staring at as I broadcast here. I see this man's face and name and likeness with a reminder to pray for him. I see it every day. And I take this very seriously. And with that as our backdrop, we'll take a quick break. I'll come back and let you hear some of what Mrs. Avedini had to say. It is as if we needed another wake-up call in America to say that we've got problems with our name and face and voice around the world. The rest of the world doesn't know what to expect from America anymore, as if we needed another reminder of that. Well, we got it from the pastor's wife, Nagme Avedini, over the weekend. And as if we needed another wake-up call, and we do, that our own freedom here at home in the United States to serve God, to worship as we see fit, to practice our Christian faith, to engage in our evangelism efforts, as if we needed another reminder that those freedoms are rapidly, dramatically slipping away, and we need to be engaged. We got another reminder from this lady, Nagme Avedini. Please don't go away. You need to hear what she has to say. We'll let you hear it coming up next. It's now 6:44 Central Time. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill.
Getting your day started, connecting faith to life. Back to Austin Hill in the morning.
Good morning. It's now 6:46 Central Time from Faith Radio, and I'm Austin Hill. Glad you're with us. Thank you for listening. It's an honor to be with you weekday mornings 6 till 8. Nagme Avedini, the wife of imprisoned American pastor Saeed Avedini. She has done some extraordinary speaking venues. As of late, she did a very lengthy television interview with a television network that broadcasts and cablecasts into the Middle East. It's called Voice of America Persia. Broadcast into the Persian regions of the world. It's owned and operated by our U.S. federal government. It's supposed to be, as I said, the Voice of America. That's the name. And she was being interviewed there, and with her words being translated into Arabic, and basically gave the call to Christ, called the nation of Iran and other nations of the Middle East and individuals there to give their hearts and minds over to Christ, and said, listen, if you feel like you're just helpless and hopeless in one of these countries where you're living under a dictatorship, you have access to the God of the universe. Pray right now. Probably not what the Voice of America hosts were intending, or perhaps not even wanting, but that's what she did. Then she took to the stage at a convention in the D.C. Beltway area in the state of Maryland over the weekend. She stepped up to the platform and introduced herself. This is part one, where she describes the plight of her husband, Saeed Avedini. Part one.
Good morning. As some of you might know, my husband, Pastor Saeed Avedini, is an American pastor who's imprisoned in Iran because of his Christian faith. He's been tortured and beaten and told to denounce his Christian faith and return to Islam, but he stood strong in his faith and proclaimed Jesus as his Lord and Savior.
And I was gratified that the audience found that to be worthy of their applause. Well, then Nagne Abedini goes on to question, what exactly is the message that we are sending to the world when our U.S. government then ultimately is beholden to us? You may not feel that way, but people in power in our government, they are beholden to we the people. We make the choices ultimately. They trace back collectively to us. But she said, what message is my country, the United States of America, sending to the world when we're negotiating in good faith, quote unquote, with Iran, all the while her husband is held captive in that country? And our government just doesn't seem to be interested or able to get him back home. Part two from Nagne Abedini.
My question is, as I am proud to see my husband stand up for his faith despite the evil and just in the face of evil, my question is, as he's standing up for his faith, how are we standing up as a country for him, as his country for him? I am heartbroken that we continue to negotiate with Iran while he's holding one of our own, an American pastor. They're holding an American pastor captive. They're beating him. They're abusing him. And we refuse to secure his release. It's been over 2.5 years. And my question is, what kind of a message are we sending to the world when we continue to negotiate while Iran continues to abuse our one of our own, an American pastor? What message are we sending to the world about where we stand on religious freedom issues?
Very worthy question. What exactly is the message from America these days? Historically, we have stood up for religious freedom, but not so much anymore. And she is, I believe, correctly identifying a problem with our U.S. foreign policy and with things here at home. And by the way, I want to mention, I've got another lengthy soundbite from Nagne Abedini here in just a moment. This was provided to us by CBN.com. We appreciate their good work as far as getting the full-length video of this posted on their website from this conference over the weekend. And I will do my best, if I'm permitted to. I would like to link to this video from the Austin Hill in the Morning blog page at myfaithradio.com. This is very, very important. We need to get our friends, our family members, our brothers and sisters in Christ to watch this and to take this lady's word seriously. Here, on the one hand, to the rest of the world, vis-a-vis the Voice of America Persia television network just days ago, she was calling on Iranians. And this is a lady who didn't sign up for this, but this is the task, the challenge that God has put in her path, and she's rising to the occasion. There she was on international television in the Middle East, calling on Iranians and residents of other nations to recognize Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. Here she is speaking to Americans, saying, what are we doing in the face of this evil, and why are we sitting in silence? Part three of Nagne Abedini speaking in the state of Maryland on Saturday.
You know, we know that silence in the face of evil is evil in itself. That means that when we don't act, when we don't speak, we are doing the same thing that the prosecutors are doing to my husband. The persecutors are doing the same things, the beatings. We're doing the same things that we're seeing on TV, the beheadings of the Christians. When we don't speak, we're doing the same action as those that are when we don't speak in the face of evil, we're doing that evil ourselves. And so that has been frustrating over the last 2.5 years, to know that my husband is being tortured and beaten as he stands strong in his faith, and that we have yet to secure his release. Something I always say is that I'm proud to be an American, because America gave me the choice to choose Jesus. And I hope and I pray that that's something we can continue to have. Religious freedom is a core value that I believe that we've steered away from. I believe the world is watching. Saeed is a great example of he's become a face to Christian persecution. And I believe the world is watching on where we stand on religious freedom issues. And there's been a lot of silence.
Pretty powerful lady with some amazing words. A very different message to the Middle Eastern world, but a very powerful one nonetheless to those of us who are Christians here in the United States of America. I'll do my best to get this video on myfaithradio.com. I hope you'll get your friends and family members to watch it. We need to see and hear what this lady is saying. I do believe God is now using her to try to wake us up here in the United States. It's 6:54 Central Time. This is Faith Radio that you're listening to. I'm Austin Hill. We're glad you're here. From the Faith Radio Network, I'm Austin Hill, here weekday mornings 6 till 8. Susie Larson hosts Live the Promise, weekday afternoons 3 till 5 p.m. Last Friday, Susie spoke with author Michael Boggs about his book, What Would Jesus Undo? Here's part of that discussion.
I just began to investigate a little bit with friends of mine that are believers and non-believers, asking them one simple question. What do you think Jesus would undo? If he could walk into our church, if he could walk into our homes, if he could walk into our lives, physically do that, what are a few of the things that you think that he would start undoing? Mm-hmm. And there were answers. I mean, I rarely ran into anybody that had nothing to say. I mean, everybody has an idea of what they think Jesus would undo. I mean, everything from war to abuse to denominationalism, you know, there's all kinds of things, cancer, eating disorders, pornography. I mean, you name it, the list went on and on and on. But at the end of the day, one of my friends sat down. He's only been a Christian for maybe about a year. And we sat down for lunch, and I said, okay, Matt, tell me, what do you think Jesus would undo? And he sort of pushed the straw through its wrapper and put the straw in his coat, took a drink, and then said the next few words loud enough for the entire restaurant to hear. And what he said was, I think Jesus would undo walls, the kind of walls that keep us Christians in and others, non-Christians, out. I think Jesus would undo walls.
Wow.
And it occurred to me that he is absolutely right. And I remembered a quote that said that we build far too many walls and not enough bridges. And so I started reading through the scripture, not just with what would Jesus undo, but specifically what walls would Jesus undo, and landed in Matthew chapter 21, which is probably one of the most dramatic passages of Jesus undoing something. And that's when he walks into the temple and starts turning over the tables and chasing the money changers out. And really, in essence, after he clears the place, he sets up church. He invites the broken people in. He invites everybody that needed to be healed. I think scripture says specifically the blind and the lame. He invited them in, and with broken tables as pew benches and a children's choir as the worship team, Jesus has church and people get healed. And as I read that, there's just this longing in me for that to happen in every church in America, in every church across the universe. For people who desperately need God to be able to get access to Him, and for us to have the kind of worship service that banishes needless religion, to bring the real thing in, which I believe has everything to do with Jesus Christ. And so that's kind of the genesis of what would Jesus undo.
Live the Promise with Susie Larson. Today her guest is Bible scholar Ron Rhodes, this afternoon at 3 here on Faith Radio. It's 6:58. I'm Austin Hill. Good morning. SRN News is next.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
Hey, welcome to it. The Faith Radio Network is what you're listening to. I am Austin Hill, here weekday mornings 6 till 8. Right here as we get our day started, and I appreciate you being with us. It's an honor to have you with us. Coming up just about half an hour from now, historian and esteemed journalist gentleman who has had an amazing career as a reporter. He is now an historian. He's a professor at Patrick Henry College in Northern Virginia. Dr. David Aikman joins us to talk about, from a biblical perspective, some of the amazing events of our life and times. I mean, this is really, truly, for better or for worse, and it's a real mixed bag, but this is what God has called us to, right? Those of us who are alive and watching it all today, it's an amazing time in our world. And it strikes me that a lot of us, probably most people alive in the United States of America today, just really don't know global upheaval. This is kind of new stuff to us. Now, our parents and grandparents' generation, they saw the world change in very dramatic ways, and it impacted them and threatened them here at home in the United States of America. Americans, Christians as well, during the World War I era and the World War II era, they saw the social order around the globe twisting and turning and going into spasms, and they realized that that could threaten us here in the United States of America. But most of us alive today, we've grown up maybe in the Cold War era, but in peacetime for the most part here at home. And what's going on around the world is really quite shocking. Anyway, Dr. David Aikman, a very thoughtful Christian historian, he'll be joining us to talk about some of what's going on and why it matters, and things that are of major, major prayer concern to us. So that's coming up in about half an hour from now. Six ways to fight off premature death. If you saw something like that online, which you can at byfaithradio.com, would you be interested in clicking on that? Our great friend Lisa Marone, physical therapist, professor, author, and speaker, the one who admonishes us regularly to, quote, get healthy for heaven's sake. She has brought this to our attention before. The fact that a lot of us here in a land of freedom, in a land of plenty, a lot of us just simply don't exercise good stewardship over our health, over our bodies, the way we could or should. And by the way, that goes for me, to first and foremost, put me at the top of the list. But Lisa Marone has published what she calls Six Ways to Fight Off Premature Death. And I'm guessing that is something that you're interested in. Let's talk with Lisa Marone when we come back. It's now 7:07 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. Talk about getting healthy for heaven's sake as we return here on the Faith Radio Network. It's now 7:08 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. Living longer and actually enjoying a higher quality of life through our years. Are those things that are appealing to you? I think it's a great thing when we get that kind of conversation going, the how to make that happen conversation going in churches. Lisa Marone is a physical therapist, an author, a professor. She joins us regularly to remind us to get healthy for heaven's sake. She's here to talk about ways to fight off premature death. Lisa Marone, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Austin. Great to be back with you.
It's good to be with you. I'm looking at this. I always kind of go towards the philosophical and theological components of the various ideas that are presented to me. This notion of premature death, one could, and I'm not doing this, but one could look at that and say, well, who's to say really what is premature? The scriptures tell us that we all have a time appointed to us to be born and a time to die, and really nothing is going to change that, at least not under God's sovereignty. How do you look at that theologically?
Yeah, I had this conversation with one of my pastors in church, and he said, you know, Acts 17 says that we're determined, the times for us are determined, they're set in place by God. And I said, that's correct, but haven't we also learned that God has a perfect will for our lives, and yet he has a permissive will that is allowed? And so oftentimes when we steer out of his perfect will in things and we wind up in his permissive will, we kind of shortchange ourselves. And I said, don't you believe that a 19-year-old child who has become distraught and takes their life, do you believe they have landed in his perfect will and have lived out all the years that God has planned for them? And he mm-hmm. said, no, I guess actually I would agree with you that that's not God's perfect will. And I said, well, couldn't we do that over time? couldn't we kill ourselves over time, say the course of 10 or 15 years, of taking our health for granted and either abusing or just ignoring it and step out of his perfect will? And he said, you know, I'm seeing where you're going with that. I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, I certainly think you are as well. You have published a very eye-opening piece called Six Ways to Fight Off Premature Death. And I'll tell you, in the many months that I've hosted this program and we have talked on a regular basis, Lisa Marone, you've certainly been very enlightening and educative for me. And I should not be surprised that your list of six ways to take better care of ourselves starts with the issue of sleep. You remind us all the time that so many of us just don't get adequate sleep. But why just start off the list of six improvements here with the sleep issue?
Yeah, that is my first go-to. After doing a ton of research, what I discovered was sleep, how much you sleep is a greater predictor of your longevity than anything, including how heavy you are, including whatever diseases you might have, that sleep across the board is the greatest predictor of longevity. And so when God created us, he created us with this control where we actually get tired and we need to fall asleep. But, you know, we've pumped ourselves up with caffeine, and we have kind of reworked our body so that we think, well, I don't really need that much sleep. You know, I'm good on 5.5-6 hours. But, you know, our bodies were created, our immune systems were created to get 7 to 8 hours of sleep. So when we are underslept, our immune systems, it's kind of like when our military gets cut back. When something comes against our body, be it cancer or some other disease, we don't have the reserves to fight that off because we've been underslept for years and decades. And so that's really critical. And just our entire aging of our body, you know, when we go to sleep, it's not just downtime where we just shut kind of this off or pause button. Our body is like at work fixing and repairing its muscles, its nervous system. Your brain cells are being rejuvenated. And so if we miss out on just 20% of that, boy, over time, that's going to make a significant difference for us.
Yeah, very interesting. Lisa Marone, who reminds us to get healthy for heaven's sake. She's authored a piece entitled Six Ways to Fight Off Premature Death, and she starts with sleep. Just to clarify, you say this with certainty over and over again. We need between 7 and 8 hours of sleep nightly. You make the point to say that a lack of sleep has a cumulative effect. In other words, I don't just get caught up tomorrow and the last month of inadequate sleep is all erased and gone away. But does that need for a certain number of hours of sleep every night, couldn't that possibly vary from person to person? I may need between 7 and 8. Maybe you do need only 6, or somebody else needs 5.5 or 6. I mean, is it really a 7 to 8 hour thing for all of us?
You know, research has kind of landed on that, which is so very interesting. While we are all very individual, we pretty much land in that category between 7 and 8 hours of sleep. They've done studies where if you've slept less than 7 hours or greater than 8 hours on a regular basis, that your longevity is decreased. And that catching up of sleep, Austin, that's a great thought that we have. It sounds really good. Like I'll just be underslept for my whole work week and I'll catch up on the weekends. But our immune system is a daily needs a daily boost. And so we actually start, the way our body rejuvenates itself is we transcribe our DNA day in and day out and make new cells. And they found that even if you were underslept for one day, that you would start to make mistakes. Your body would make mistakes as it's replicating itself. So even on a day-to-day basis, we're starting to mess with our whole body just by being underslept.
Yeah, very interesting. Item number 2 on your list of 6 ways to fight off premature death, you address a problem you call insulin resistance. Tell us what that's about.
Yeah, most people are familiar with the problems that happen because of insulin resistance, such as type 2 diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, those sorts of things. All of those stem from something that's called insulin resistance. Now, insulin is a hormone that our bodies produce, and it helps to regulate our blood sugar. Our bodies were created to function on a fairly steady level of blood sugar. So when we do eat something, our blood sugar rises, and to make sure that it doesn't rise too high, our body will produce insulin, which will bring that level back down. But when we eat things that spike our blood sugars at a very quick rate, and those things are sugar products, and they can even be fruit, which is sugar, or simple carbohydrates like white rice, white breads, pastas, our blood sugar will spike very quickly, and the body does not know where that spike will end, and so it dumps a huge amount of insulin into the bloodstream in order to protect us. And that continual dumping on a day-in and day-out basis makes our bodies immune to the effects of insulin, and that's when we become resistant to our own insulin and we can't control our blood sugars anymore.
Very well. Lisa Marone, she's a physical therapist, an author, and a professor. She's on our guest line. We'll take a quick break and continue with her in just a moment as she tells us about six ways that she recommends to fight off premature death. Yes, indeed, there are things we can do proactively to take better care of us ourselves. She's listing them off for us. We'll continue with the list in just a moment. This is Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill. It's now 7:18 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. Breakpoints on the way in just about 8 minutes from now, so stand by for that. Lisa Marone is on our guest line here at Faith Radio. She has authored a piece entitled Six Ways to Fight Off Premature Death, making the case that there are things that probably all of us can begin working on to become better stewards of our health and to live longer, but also to live a higher quality of life for the years that we are given. You note in your piece, Lisa Marone, that we need to be safety conscious. That's a very broad brush stroke, kind of far-reaching sort of category. Be safety conscious. Where are you going with that? What does that mean?
Yeah, you know, that was a real personal one for me. I was treating a young man, 20 years old, a number of years ago, and I was treating him for back pain because he had fallen off his bike. Well, as I was talking with him, he longboarded, and I said, "Do you wear a helmet with that when you're longboarding?" And he said, "No." And I said, "You really, really, really need to wear a helmet with that." And I discharged him, and 3 months later, he was longboarding, hit a bump in the road going down a hill, slammed his head on the pavement, and he was in a coma and dead in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that I just cringe as I watch young children and even adults biking, longboarding, skiing without protection on your sweet head that has all your intellectual property in it. That's your command center, and we just frivolously put that up on wheels and send it down the hill. And so it's really critical that we don't end up prematurely dying because of our own faulty safety habits.
Now, of course, there is this this phenomena that kind of creates its own subculture, this phenomena called extreme sports. And longboarding down a steep hill or, let's get even more crazy here just for the purpose of conversation. And people actually do this. You've probably seen the outcome of this, Lisa Marone, riding bicycles off of the top of buildings and trying to land into a swimming pool or whatever it is. I mean, how many reality TV shows glorify that stuff, make it look oh so funny and oh so entertaining? And there's a culture that surrounds it. I remember my son is in high school now, but I remember at age fifth, sixth grade, something like that, he brought a book home from school that was all about extreme sports. And he was given the test, you know, go read this with your dad. It's real fun. And we did read it together. And dad ended up concluding, this stuff is crazy. But
yeah,
that's the world we live in. Take risks. It's supposed to be cool, especially for guys. What do you say to the men in particular on this one?
Yeah, you know, your head is just as soft as a woman, and it's just as soft as a young girl. It's not your skull is nice and smooth on the outside, but it has sharp, bony points on the inside. And all you need to do is strike your head lightly on the ground, and you can just puncture right into your brain and create brain damage that oftentimes is irreparable. And so it's really critical, if you're the type who wants to throw themselves off of things, but just put a helmet on your head. And listen, for adults, extreme sports is texting while driving. Don't do that. You know, it's driving without your seatbelt because you're just going around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
You never know what's going to happen just around the corner. And so please just buckle yourself in, place something protective over your head when you're doing things that might put you at higher risk.
Lisa Marone, author of a piece entitled Six Ways to Fight Off Premature Death. final issue that you raised in your recent writing here, Lisa Marone. You say don't load up on free radicals. What in the world is a free radical for those of us who are challenged in terms of nutritional terminology?
Yeah, you know, everything free is not good for you, and a free radical is not a good thing. A free radical, if you would, is a substance that will wander your body in need of an oxygen molecule to complete itself. And what it does is it goes to all of your nice, healthy cells, and it steals oxygen from them. And what happens then is the cell's walls break down, and the cell becomes broken in and of itself. And free radicals are what leads to aging. It's what leads to cancers. And so when I say don't load up on free radicals, there are certain things that we can stop doing that will protect us from an excessive amount of free radicals. There's a few of the things that I've listed. One is don't eat blackened charcoal foods, you know, or like use that as a rare treat if you happen to like that. But don't regularly grill your hamburgers till they're all black on the outside or what have you, or eat blackened fish, because that black, that tar, contains carcinogenic chemicals in it, and so that's cancer-producing. Don't go out in the sun without sunblock and repeatedly get sunburned. That sunburn actually creates a whole host of free radicals in your body. Certain things that we eat, trans fats that are in processed foods and in potato chips and things like that. Again, small amounts, but in moderation, because it's really important that we don't load up on things that are going to age us quicker.
Mm. Lisa Marone, she reminds us to get healthy for heaven's sake. Her latest writing entitled Six Ways to Fight Off Premature Death. Find it on our website at myfaithradio.com. Lisa, thanks so much. As always, love what you do. We appreciate you making time for us today. And I'm going to go chase the free radicals away from out in the hallway, and we will look forward to talking to you again soon.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too, Lisa. 7:25 Central Time from Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill, and Breakpoints on the way in moments. Hey, good morning. It's now 7:35 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. Honored to be with you weekday mornings as we seek to be hopeful, helpful, informative, and challenging here at the start of your day. You may have heard some news here or there, maybe even in the news headlines from SRN Radio News, our network news carrier. You may have heard some details about shakeups and tensions in the Middle East. And you've also perhaps heard about shakeups and tensions in, of all places, Europe. Yes, the country of Russia on the rampage, invading some of its neighboring countries, Ukraine in particular. Some would say that has driven the stock market down here in the United States of America. We don't know what is to be expected next. And this is in no small part the reason, at least a big part of the reason, why we have so much global upheaval now. The rest of the world doesn't know what to expect from the United States anymore. And the United States, along with the rest of the world, doesn't know what's going on in Europe. They are very chaotic times that we live in indeed. Joining us to talk about it, a man who has covered as a news reporter, as a journalist, some of the most amazing things that have transpired over the last several decades. He's now an historian at Patrick Henry College in Northern Virginia. We welcome back to the program Dr. David Aikman on our guest line. David Aikman, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's a great pleasure.
Russia. You know a thing or two about Russia. You've written a few news stories about Russia, I guess, back when they were called the Soviet Union, and you know, when they were a very untrustworthy nation. And I don't know, have we gone full circle? Do we not know what they're going to do next at this point, David?
Well, I think what we can surmise from Putin's actions is that he is going to keep pushing as far as he can into Western Ukraine, because he wants to make a land corridor between Russia that is contiguous with the Crimean Peninsula, which he, of course, already holds. And he's basically going to do that. He's going to have to occupy a whole chunk of the Ukrainian coast, the Black Sea coast. He's got to overcome some important Ukrainian cities. And it's a very nasty prospect of war.
There is a prospect of war between Russia and Ukraine. For more war, shall we say? Is that what you're telling us?
Yes. I mean, essentially, Russia has acted more or less as the North Vietnamese did by invading South Vietnam, or North Korea did by invading South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to exploit the sort of Russian demographic presence in Ukraine to stir up Russian nationalism at home and to secure victories for the expansion of the Russian space controlling Eurasia. And this is the rebuilding, or the attempt to rebuild, Russia's land empire.
Mm-hmm. David Aikman, he is an historian at Patrick Henry College in Northern Virginia. He's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network, as he is periodically, talking about the invasion of Ukraine by the nation of Russia. David, from the faith perspective, in the middle of this, we've got the Russian Orthodox Church. And some people would look to that and say, my goodness, there's just such great, rich Christian heritage and history in the Russian Orthodox Church, which I think on some level is true. I can't tell what little we see coming from the Russian Orthodox Church. I can't tell if this church, because it's controlled by the government, if it's just being the church and actually speaking its moral voice collectively, or if it's just become sort of a political wing to articulate whatever Vladimir Putin wants the church to articulate. Tell us what the church's role is in this.
The Ukrainian Orthodox Church was undeniably pro-Soviet and supported the Russian government.
Mm-hmm.
But in the time since the demonstrations in the Maidan in Kiev began in February last year, the Russian Orthodox Church has sided with the loyal Ukrainians who would like to have a closer relationship with Europe. So the Russian Orthodox Church has definitely become more pro-Western recently.
Well, and that's a hopeful thing, it sounds to me, then.
Well, it is hopeful. I mean, this whole issue of the Ukraine is Ukraine wants to raise its flag of cultural identity with the European Union. It thinks that if it gets closer to Europe, its own social and political structure would become less corrupt. I mean, I have a missionary friend who's lived and worked in Ukraine for years, and he says the problem of bribery and corruption in daily life is absolutely appalling, and the whole system has to be sort of rebuilt. And those demonstrations in February last year were essentially saying, we want the European system of justice, not the old-fashioned Soviet system.
Very interesting. So, wow, that's an interesting turn of events. David Aikman is our guest here on Faith Radio, an historian and very decorated, very accomplished journalist. Having covered the Soviet Union and the corruption and the lies and the abuse and manipulation of that government regime back in the day, what do you make today, David Aikman, of the fact that a leader of the political opposition, what little there is in Russia, a gentleman who was very prolific and articulate, voice of opposition to Vladimir Putin, even as I understood it, opposed the invasion of Ukraine and whatnot. He ended up being shot dead on Friday, I believe it was, at the Russian Parliament building. I believe I've got my facts straight on that. I mean, this is pretty creepy stuff. We just can't imagine that happening in the U.S. Capitol building or at the White House or what have you. But how are we supposed to interpret this turn of events here?
Well, first of all, it was actually 200 yards from the Kremlin walls.
Oh, my gosh.
Second, Boris Nemtsov, whom I met actually back in the 90s when he was a rising star under Boris Yeltsin,
mm-hmm.
He was a staunch political opponent of Putin and claimed that he was about to release evidence that would demonstrate conclusively that Russia had been behind all the separatist agitation in Ukraine. So, you know, if you oppose Putin publicly, you are in great danger. I mean, the number of journalists and other figures who have been murdered in the last few years is really rather frightening. And he actually predicted that he would probably be killed by Putin, who wanted to suppress his point of view, and that's apparently what happened, or at least it hasn't been proven yet, but there's a strong suspicion that it took place.
Sure. David Aikman, for the Christian living here in the U.S. who's saying, well, there's just nothing we can do about that here except pray about it, would you concur that that's the case, or is there something more to do than simply pray about nations invading one another and corruption in faraway lands across the ocean? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, in a microcosmic way, there are several Western American missionary organizations operating in the Ukraine and providing very important humanitarian and sort of psychological help for Ukrainian villages and Ukrainian families. And one can look up on the internet various Protestant Christian groups that are really working hard to help Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's obviously not military support, but it is building up the morale of the Ukrainians and saying, look, guys, there are people in other parts of the world who really, really wish you well and want to help you. So one can certainly look to that.
Very well. David Aikman from Patrick Henry College. He's a professor of history there. We'll continue with him in just a moment as he's on our guest line. It's now 7:44 Central Time. This is the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. Back in moments.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
It's now 7:47 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. The events of our world, the times of our lives, that's part of what we get at here on this program, and we try to see the unfolding of events in our lifetime through the lenses of our Christian faith. Dr. David Aikman, historian at Patrick Henry College in Virginia, he helps us do just that. David, I wanted to ask you about the current state of Israeli-Iranian relations and the United States kind of being in the middle of this. Now, we saw some very interesting news from multiple news agencies come up over the last 3 or 4 days. Most of the news agencies are outside the U.S., the ones that are reporting this news. But allegedly, Israel actually had a plan to launch a bomb at Iran to try to take out their nuclear capabilities. And allegedly, the United States and our President Barack Obama threatened to shoot down Israeli aircraft if they made a preemptive strike like that. Now, the thought that Israel would attack Iran is not surprising to me in the least. They've been saying they'll do what it takes to protect themselves from a very unstable Iran. The idea that the United States would launch a military assault on Israel is extraordinary. What do you make of this, and how would you help us interpret this?
Well, of course, I can't tell you whether the specific report is genuine. I do know that a number of Democratic senators who are very opposed to Israel's position on Iran had suggested that if Israel attacked Iran and thereby overflew Iraq in order to get there, the United States would be in a position to shoot them down. That was an American side suggestion. Now, is it possible that President Obama indicated that he might do the same thing? I don't know. It's certainly plausible. And it's extremely disturbing because people sometimes forget that Israel faces absolute existential disaster if Iran gets nuclear weapons and tries to carry out its threat to wipe Israel off the world map. And so this is not some sort of minor disagreement on tactics or strategy. It's an absolute survival issue. And I think Prime Minister Netanyahu, when he comes here in a couple of days, is going to make that point to the U.S. Congress.
Historically, over the course of most of my lifetime, David Aikman, as an American, Christians, evangelical Christians in particular, have remained very supportive of Iran. There are those who look at the scriptural admonitions that nations that bless Israel will in turn be blessed, and they look at that and say, will the United States best stand with Israel, be supportive of Israel, and seek to defend the nation of Israel so we can be in God's good graces? That's a whole theological debate in and of itself that we don't have time to get into. But it seems like American Christians are becoming, I would say safely, a little more ambivalent towards Israel. And there is this growing perception that says, hey, one of the reasons there is turmoil in the Middle East is because our nation, with the most mighty military in the world, is pretty much in lockstep with one side of the war over there. We're on Israel's side, and that creates consternation with the Palestinians and with the Arab world. And if we just become more neutral and get out of this, we'd save the world and ourselves a lot of trouble. What do you make of that more recent interpretation of Middle Eastern affairs and a growing consensus, I think, among a lot of Christians?
Well, the idea that the United States could micromanage a resolution of the Israeli-Palestinian dispute is absolutely absurd. I mean, first of all, unfortunately, although most Palestinians probably want to live peaceably with Israel, a significant minority, including the government of the Palestine official government structure, they continue to insist that they're standing by their demand that Israel absolutely cease to exist as a state. And this is very disturbing, even though Palestinians, when they're in the United States, tend to say, well, we accept Israel's right to exist. In point of fact, the propaganda from the Palestine Authority on Israel is just filled with hatred and destruction, and it's not doing any good at all. And does the United States think it can temper this dispute and can therefore control the Palestinian propaganda as well as control exactly what Israel does to defend itself? I don't think that's realistic.
For the American Christian who is hearing even our discussion, David Aikman, and they maybe see or hear occasional news headlines about Israel-Palestinian conflicts, which have been going on for most all of our lifetimes, and they say, well, you know, why does this matter? Why does this matter to our country and to the cause of the church around the world?
Well, it matters because when Jesus Christ returns, as we Christians believe he will, he's not going to return to Outer Mongolia or Dominican Republic. He's going to return to Israel. And what happens when he comes back is going to determine the whole future of the world under the Kingdom of God millennium. And so we certainly need to get that right. But in addition to that, we would be very, very foolish to put ourselves as an impediment to Israel being able to defend itself against enemies who have sworn to destroy it completely. We have an obligation to stand by Israel.
Again, final question here, and again to bring up a theological question for you, Dr. Aikman. There are those who say, you know, given the scriptural promises, if you will, the scriptural admonitions about the nation of Israel, there are those who say no matter what the United States does or doesn't do, Israel will prevail. It will survive as a nation. Do you agree with that characterization?
Well, I do, because I believe the Bible is true, and the Bible speaks clearly of Jerusalem being surrounded by enemies, and nevertheless the Lord enabling Israel to survive and prevail against all its opponents.
Very well. Dr. David Aikman, historian at Patrick Henry College in Northern Virginia, having been with us here at Faith Radio. Dr. Aikman, as always, thanks. Good to talk to you again. We look forward to speaking again soon.
Thanks so much for having me on.
It's now 7:54 from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Our program continues momentarily. Take these words that I'm speaking, love. Take these thoughts that I'm. It's now 7:55 from the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. I'm Austin Hill, and thank you for being here. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate your support of Faith Radio, and it's an honor to be with you weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we strive to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful here at the start of your day. And by the way, if you tend to think, I've received, I guess, sort of an uptick in email from listeners here at Faith Radio. You can message me anytime, by the way, austin@myfaithradio.com. That's austin@myfaithradio.com. Pretty easy, pretty straightforward. I welcome your you getting in touch. I welcome your email anytime. But received some very thoughtful notes from folks saying, you know, we appreciate the discussion about current events. Yes, we take very seriously discussions about our own personal spirituality and our individual faith journeys and our families and our marriages and parenting. We do a fair amount of discussion on all of those very important subjects here on this program. We also bring into the discussion an understanding of current events, things that are going on in our own country and around the world, and what they mean for us and our families, and for the cause of the church. If you appreciate that combination, and the fact that, frankly, we're doing some things a little bit differently here on this program that most Christian talk radio programs don't do. If that's something that is of value to you, I ask for your support. We are running recorded announcements that just started today, actually, acknowledging that our spring share event is coming up next month. It's here we are, the beginning of March, and we're about 6 weeks away, 5 weeks, something like that. And I would just ask that you come on board as a supporter of ours and enable this kind of programming to continue. We're fully listener-supported, and yes, there are people who own and operate businesses, and their businesses support us. When I say we're listener-supported, I'm not precluding business sponsorship of what we do. But when I say we're listener-supported, I kind of accept that as a given. The business owners are people, too. And the business owners are listeners. So we are fully listener-supported. I ask that you come on board with us at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And all the info is right there on how you can become a part of our support team. Hope you'll look into that and join us. And by the way, I've learned so much just in the last, 8, almost 9 months now that I've been hosting this morning program here at Faith Radio. Learned so much from our great friend Lisa Marone, physical therapist, professor, and author. And she joins us every few days here on our program to talk about health tips, ways in which we can get healthier for heaven's sake, as she likes to say it. And we spoke with her earlier this morning. I hope you'll get to myfaithradio.com and see what she had to say about ways to prevent premature death. First on the list is get enough sleep at night. I have learned a whole lot about the profound significance of getting enough sleep just in the last few months of talking with Lisa Marone on a regular basis. Hope you'll read up on what she had to say at myfaithradio.com. Coming up on tomorrow's episode, theologian and Christian apologist Abdu Murray joins us. That and much more just ahead. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 6. Have a great day and keep it here at Faith Radio. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.